You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. This is Civic Media Mornings. Happy Friday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. You can always get involved in the program, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. This is a shocking statistic, but about a third of Wisconsinites who rely on private wells for their water are rarely notified about nearby contamination. That is, again, alarming. So there is a new bill that is going through the Congress, or the legislature, rather, that will require DNR to notify local health officials. To tell us about that is Peter Burris, Government Affairs Manager for Wisconsin Conservation Voters. You can go to conservationvoters.org to get more of the information. Peter, welcome. We're glad you're here. How is this even possible that people who use wells are not being notified of contamination? It doesn't seem plausible.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian. Thanks for having me, Jamie. It's great to be here. It is really unfortunate that this is just kind of the lay of the land here in Wisconsin. You know, for the folks that receive their water from public drinking water systems, they receive consumer confidence reports every once a year or twice a year, depending on the size of the municipality. But yeah, for those one-third of Wisconsinites who rely on private wells, that's their property. And there's not a... there's not a good notification system in place for those folks. So, and I would say, you know, just generally taking a step back, our legislature has in the past decade made some good steps to supporting public water infrastructure, but has really left private well owners behind. So an example of that, just this past summer in the budget, we increased financing for our storm, our wastewater, and our drinking water infrastructure by $732 million, which is great. Really helps, will help tackle PFAS, lead, nitrate-related challenges. But again, yeah, for those one-third of Wisconsinites who rely on private wells, they've been left on their own, and we need to be doing more for them.
So with AB 635 and SB 628, and by the way, conservationvoters.org has an incredible bill tracker over there. If you want to see how your representatives are voting, what bills are passing through Senates and committees, it's a fabulous resource for anybody who's interested in these things. But what would these bills for wells, what would these essentially propose? What is the proposal and what would they actually do for homeowners?
Yeah, it's a super straightforward bill. It's a one-page bill. And it, based on the principle, I think something that we all agree on, right? Knowledge is power. Everyone has a right to know what's in their drinking water. So the bill would just require DNR to notify county health departments, county land and water conservation departments, and tribal health departments when they've identified groundwater contamination. So that's any exceedance of a groundwater standard or a PFAS standard. Our thinking there then is that, you know, that means local health officials will have the tools they need to be able to better support folks in their own communities.
If this were to pass, how long does it take to put those measures into place? Because, like you said, a third of Wisconsinites use these private wells. That's a lot of people, a lot of wells. What's the timetable for this?
Yeah, the timetable built into the bill for just kind of getting this notification system up and running is 7 months.
That seems pretty fast.
I was just going to say,
seems pretty fast.
Yeah. Government-related project. I was like, oh, all right. Well, that'd be nice. I was expecting, years.
Well, and the good news is that a lot of this information is already available, right? DNR does a great job of tracking a lot of water quality data on different trackers, you know, PFAS Interactive Data Viewer, for example. The challenge is that if you're a busy parent, you got to get your kids to school on a Monday morning, you're not logging on to look at the PFAS Interactive Data Viewer.
Right.
And then you're not logging on to the lead tracker. You know, like, sure, you need a better automated notification process.
We're talking with Peter Burris. He's the Government Affairs Manager for Wisconsin Conservation Voters. That is conservationvoters.org if you want to check it out. Where do these bills stand right now, right? As they're moving through the legislature, where are we currently at as far as their movement?
Yeah, there's some good news and some bad news here. So to my knowledge, this is one of the most popular pieces of legislation introduced so far this session. There are 69 legislators co-sponsoring the bill. That's more than half of the Assembly and Senate. That includes both Republican and Democratic authors and co-sponsors, and you know, lots of stakeholders. So we sent a letter from 60 stakeholders, a letter of support last November. Other key groups have registered in support of the group of the bill, the Counties Association, the Wisconsin Association of Local Health Departments and Boards, the Wisconsin Public Health Association. There are no groups opposed or registered against the bill, but it stalled out. It received a public hearing in the Assembly and the Senate and has not moved from there. So the rumor we've heard, and you know, we're still trying to verify, but the rumor we've heard is that Speaker Voss doesn't want to advance a bill with bipartisan authors. And that's the, you know, that's the kind of gross politics that Wisconsinites are fed up with. It's the thing we're trying to get past. And so I think the question before us now is, will the Republican legislators who put their name on this bill, who also believe that it's really important to get done, will they stand up to their leadership? Will they deliver for Wisconsinites, or will they let the bill die?
Well, Peter, we ask this all the time when we hear things like this, and you said, you know, this is the rumor, but a lot of times rumors have at least a kernel of truth to them. What can people do? Even if you're not one of the one third of Wisconsinites that rely on private wells, you have to worry about the cleanliness and the reporting of drinking water for everybody. What can we do?
Yeah, the biggest thing you can do is to call or email your legislators. So we, you know, conservationvoters.org/water, you can take direct action there. There's a link for sharing your support for the Water Pollution Notification Act. You can also call your legislator directly, share your support and say, you know, Representative, will you speak to Speaker Voss and ask him to give this bill a vote? We are in a different lay of the land with our legislature than we were 2 years ago, right? We are competitive maps, even splits. It's a toss-up in November who's going to win control of both the Senate and the Assembly and the governor's office, right? And so we believe very strongly that folks, representatives, senators need to deliver if they want to be reelected. And so I think we need to make that clear. We have 1 week until the Assembly wraps up their work for the session, which is wild, right? Like an 8-month vacation is
right.
kind of insane.
Sounds all right.
But, you know, that's where we are. So we have 1 week to get this done. And so it's really pressure's on. Folks, it is really, really helpful. Everything I hear as a lobbyist is that it doesn't take much to elevate something in the state legislature as a priority, because the reality is folks are just not contacting Assembly reps and state senators as much as folks in Congress. So those calls, those emails really do help.
Is it about community engagement as a lobbyist? Can you speak to that a little bit? I mean, does it help when people are calling and when Wisconsinites basically tell the legislature that they're worried about shaping their environmental policies, that they're also worried about these things? Does that help the cause at all so that people, because I think sometimes, right, you feel like you're just talking into a void. So does it actually help from your standpoint when people are doing these things?
Yeah, we all need to remember that we all care about these things. And when we take collective action, it's not just our voice, it's all of our voices. So we've been doing a lot of work around this bill. We have sent nearly 900 emails to all 99 assembly districts. We've knocked more than 1,000 doors with water testing kits. We've made 2,000 calls into priority districts. We've surveyed 2,300 Wisconsinites. We're running digital ads across 17 districts. But we need everybody. That's, you know, we're doing this because we've heard demand for this policy and because it's what we need to get this across the finish line. So I'm envisioning getting this across the finish line and all being able to collectively celebrate together. We're not going to get to that point unless we do all take responsibility and do the work and push our legislators to do the right thing.
Peter Burris is our guest. He's the Government Affairs Manager for Wisconsin Conservation Voters. Conservationvoters.org is the website. We're talking about the Water Pollution Notification Act. Peter, it would seem that any bill regarding conservation should be an easy sell. But as a lobbyist, as you come into these and deal with legislators and stuff, is that the case, or is there still hesitation? Not so much with this bill, because you said this one has bipartisan support and authorship. But is there still a wall for some conservation efforts that just would seem hard to understand to regular folks?
Yeah, I think there are kind of two key challenges. One is, as it relates to this bill is prioritization, right? So oftentimes it's just a matter of how do you elevate a bill to level of priority and compete with some of the politicking and, you know, and cut through all the noise. Quite frankly, the other obstacle that really comes down on a lot of our more preventative accountability related work, the challenge is polluters, big business, special interest groups who spend a lot of time and money in the Capitol. Quite frankly, they are outworking all of us. And so that's what we're seeing right now, for example, with Assembly Bill 131, the PFAS bill that Governor Evers and DNR and Republican legislators have done incredible work trying to find compromise. You know, we opposed that bill as it was introduced at the start of the session. We support the substitute amendment that Governor Evers has developed with Republican legislators. They did a really good job finding common ground and addressing major concerns. It's not the exact bill we wanted, but compromise, right?
Sure.
But here we are still. The bill has not moved forward because big business special interest groups in the Capitol are doing all they can to stop it from moving forward. And so again, it's a question of, you know, will Republican legislators stand up to those big business special interests and put impacted Wisconsin families first, or will they let it die?
I want to look at something that happened yesterday really quickly because we only have a couple more minutes. If you weren't following along yesterday, the Trump administration has finalized a repeal of the EPA's 2009 endangerment finding. It's been the legal backbone for basically regulating climate pollution. And I know we talked a little bit off the air. This is not necessarily your area of expertise, but as a representative of conservation voters, how should we feel about this? What does this essentially do for not only Wisconsin, but looking at the rest of the country as well?
Yeah, I think this just underscores more than ever what we need to do here in state to offset the potential negative impacts. And heading into a big election year, I think this should be on our minds. So this decision is really the Trump administration putting corporate polluter profits before the health of Wisconsin families. So the EPA endangerment finding from 2009, as you said, Jamie, concluded that greenhouse gases like carbon pollution and methane endanger public health. So this was the finding that we used to produce fuel efficient cars and curb toxic greenhouse gases, and really central to our efforts to tackle climate change. So think preventing insect vector borne diseases, making our air safer to breathe, limiting flooding in our communities, limiting dangerous heat waves. So rescinding this endangerment finding is going to make our families more sick. It's going to put good jobs at risk, and it's going to raise our energy costs. So I think it's one of many, many scary things happening at the federal level. And again, just really underscores what we have to do here in Wisconsin to protect our communities.
Well, if anybody wants to get more information, go to conservationvoters.org. And as Peter said, contact your assembly people, contact your representatives. We do have a voice, so use it, especially if you know you want to turn on your faucet and know that you're getting clean drinking water, which should be, you know, in this day and age, should be a no-brainer.
There shouldn't be a debate about this. This should just be something that happens in this country, in this state. Why are these things so hard?
I don't know. Well, thanks. Peter Burris, again, the Government Affairs Manager for Wisconsin Conservation Voters, conservationvoters.org. Peter, have a great weekend. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you both.
It's 7:19 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. Coming up, AI toys. Are they endangering your kids? We're going to talk about that. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
7:22 right now. We hope you are having a great morning. It's going to be a beautiful weekend in some parts of Wisconsin. We are looking at highs close to 50. I think that's shorts weather for a lot of people. I mean, 20s in Wisconsin. 20s in Wisconsin is shorts weather, let's be honest.
Yeah, I'm thinking, maybe I don't have to wear all the heavy gear. I could just wear regular gear.
I could lose a layer over the next couple of days. I'm sure I'll have to pick it back up again, though, at some point.
Are you comfortable letting your kids play with AI toys? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I had never heard of this contraption. Miko, it is, yeah. That's a company name and a toy name. It's a small AI-powered robot that is supposedly designed for children. And on the website, it describes it as designed to spark creativity and learning while keeping your child's safety and privacy at the center of everything. No hidden data practices, no unsafe conversations, no surprises, just kid-safe AI your family can trust. End quote. Fast forward to Senator Marsha Blackburn and Richard Blumenthal. This is bipartisan, because you know Marsha Blackburn's a Republican, Richard Blumenthal is a Democrat. They say that Miko exposed thousands of children's conversations and has a database that is publicly accessible that may, in fact, Jamie, have names, mm-hmm. personal details, the responses of children. That sounds not sinister at all.
If you are a company who in your description of a toy has to say that many times, safety, privacy, data practices, unsafe, no surprises, trust, if you have to put those words in your description that many times, I am going to be skeptical of you and what your product potentially is.
But you doth protest too much, my friends.
So I think this is fascinating, though, because remember when Tinker Toys and Lincoln Logs were a thing? They were so simple. And
I also remember when Furbies came out, and there was a big uproar over. I hated Furbies too, but they came out, and it was supposedly that Furbies could somehow pay attention and come to life like Gremlins.
We have also progressed in our technology even since Furby, right? And
of course.
Teddy Ruxpin, where you put the cassette in, and I thought Teddy Ruxpin was the most incredibly creepy thing because his eyes moved side to side. I was not, as a child, a Teddy Ruxpin fan in any way, shape, or form. I found him to be creepy. At any rate, this is interesting because the exposed files from this Miko database, according to Senate staffers, actually date back to December of 2025, and they were organized by language and dialect. So children's voice recordings didn't appear to be included, but the toys' replies alone could allow someone to piece together those conversations. Now, Blackburn and Blumenthal are saying that it's a basic cybersecurity lapse. They've been questioned whether the company adequately protected children's privacy. Now, of course, Miko CEO denied any sort of breach. Well, what's he going
to
say?
Nothing to see here.
What is this human being going to say?
Not me.
He says that no children's voices or personal information were publicly accessible and no customer data was actually compromised. However, Senate staff says that they found that the exposure using free publicly available tools to analyze the toys' web communications.
Uh-oh.
And by late Wednesday of this week, the entire database was no longer publicly accessible. Nothing says you have something to hide like taking it all down.
Oh, you weren't supposed to see this. Did I say that part out loud?
Yeah.
No.
I think this is fascinating because AI is one of those things that actually terrifies me. I am not, I said it earlier in this program, I'm not afraid of innovation. I'm not afraid of growth. AI actually terrifies me. AI terrifies me. It really, truly does. Because we don't have any parameters on AI. There are no rules. This is like the wild, wild west when it comes to technology.
And I saw the Terminator, Jamie. Skynet will become self-actualized.
And our robot
overlords.
There are a lot of people who want this technology not for good, right? And that's what I think
like
scares me.
Like any technology.
I think it's terrifying, especially when we have no rules and regulation on what AI is capable of right now. And that's just it, too. We don't actually know its capabilities fully quite yet, especially as we continue to advance and to develop it.
Well, that's the big question, right? Is AI going to be a tool that we use to make things easier and make things more efficient? Or are we going to succumb to AI? And you can already see people, if you've read letters or emails, you can tell when something is AI. And if you just give over to AI, that's when the dynamic changes. That's when it's not a tool, it's a crutch, and a crutch then becomes your main source of support.
Mm-hmm.
We have to figure out that line where, yes, it's good. It can be great.
Yeah, sure.
But like you said, anything, any new technology can be turned to evil quickly.
Think about the fact that Elon Musk is now basically dabbling, playing in the field of AI. Is that the type of person you really want running your AI? Like, right? Think of what he could do with that chainsaw if it's AI powered. But I mean, that's what scares me. Is there are human beings like that in this world who are taking this technology and they're already incredibly brilliant people? And what are they going to end up doing with it? And then when we look at this, I mean, these lawmakers, Blumenthal and Blackburn, actually had to send out letters to other AI companies that make AI toys. Saying, we have concerns about this. We have concerns about your toys. We have concerns about your children's safety. And I don't know. This is why I kind of wish I was back in the days of Lincoln Logs and Tinker Toys, especially when adults are one thing. I don't feel safe as an adult. I definitely don't feel safe putting AI in the hands of children.
No, it is worrisome. And I'd urge every parent, just do your due diligence mm-hmm. before you buy your kid the latest and greatest alleged thing. And
we're sure past luck. The days of Tickle Me Elmo. Yeah.
Oh my God. I got it. We had one of those in the house. It did not frighten me, but a lot of things do. We're going to talk about the updates from Minnesota on the other side of the news. Civic Media Mornings. I'm Brian Newton.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It's 7:29. Thank you so much for joining us. 7:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great morning listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. If you're in Wisconsin Rapids listening on WFHR or in Richland Center on WRCE, thank you so much for having us on. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. As you know, last week, Border Czar Tom Homan announced that first they were pulling back 700 ICE agents out of Minneapolis. Then it came out the other day that the Trump administration is ending the crackdown. Supposedly everything is fixed in Minneapolis, so they're getting everybody out of there. The operation has been called the largest immigration enforcement operation ever, according to DHS, and we know how it's been going. But what's going on now, and what is really going to happen with this supposed shutdown of the operation? Tim Wegener is a core leader of Invisible Twin Cities, a local chapter of National Indivisible, rather. It's a grassroots group of volunteers. Tim, thanks for being here. A lot still going on. We know there was the pullback of troops, allegedly. Then there was now the ending of this. But that didn't stop things in Minneapolis from still being very, very tense this weekend and up until yesterday, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think the biggest thing that changed over the last 2 weeks with Tom Homan was their PR strategy. That changed.
Okay.
Facts on the ground didn't change. I mean, just I think it was Tuesday, we had a high-speed multi-vehicle crash in downtown St. Paul, residential area, where they were chasing somebody at a high rate of speed. And this is just one example of the lawlessness and the terrorism that they're inflicting upon the Twin Cities in Minnesota.
How are people responding to what's happening? Because we're what, 6 weeks into this? Give me, because I know they started bringing in ICE agents in about December. Obviously, then we saw things escalate with the killing of Renee Good and Alex Pretty. So with the news and this ping-ponging back and forth with Tom Homan, how are people responding to this in the Twin Cities right now?
You know, I think... a lot of different ways, but I think the mindset that people have right now is this is the end of the beginning, is the best way to put it.
Okay.
I mean, there's some relief for sure. There's still anxiety and anger and sadness and all of the emotions that we've all been having, but more than anything, everybody's still resolved. I have been talking to people in our communities. You can see it in our chats. Everybody looked at yesterday's press conference where he announced they were pulling out and said, that's great. The work continues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Governor Walz said, trust but verify. So how does that look for average Minnesotans? How does that look outside of Minnesota, as we've talked about you know, the possibilities of these kind of operations coming to Wisconsin. We've seen them already in Chicago, Los Angeles, all over. So what does Trust But Verify mean for us? How do we enact that?
Yeah, for Minnesota, it means is a continuation of what we're doing, looking out for your neighbors, making sure that they're being fed or that they've got adequate access to healthcare. All the things we've been doing these last 6-7 weeks to make sure people could survive this. I think the broader picture for the rest of the country, one of the lessons learned, and I think there's a number of them that they can learn from what we did here, is get ready now. And what I mean by that is, you know, in the month of January, community organizations in Minnesota trained over 30,000 constitutional observers in the month of January.
Wow.
The state Democratic Party trained over 10,000 constitutional observers in January. Indivisible Twin Cities, my group that I'm part of, we trained a couple thousand people. So I'm saying that because that gets you ready for when it does come to your city. It teaches you what you need to do to document. It teaches you what to do to hold them accountable. And most importantly, it teaches what you need to do to be safe while you're doing it.
We're talking with Tim Wagoner, a core leader of Indivisible Twin Cities, which is a local chapter of National Indivisible, a grassroots organization, talking about some of the ICE agents' withdrawal from the Twin Cities. You were mentioning training these observers. What other things did Indivisible Twin Cities do during, because I know you guys were very instrumental in helping organize protests and some of these bigger ones that have played out across the nation. Your group was very instrumental in helping with that on the local front. So what are some other things as a grassroots organization have you been involved in?
So certainly, as you just mentioned, the constitutional observer training, the protests. I mean, January 23rd, it was below zero all day. The wind chill was minus 20. And we had 75,000 people marching in downtown Minneapolis for 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I think some other things that really mattered here, and I think this is another one of the lessons, is from the start, we, along with a lot of other organizations in the cities and clergy and everybody else, leaders, elected leaders, first and foremost, it was stay nonviolent, stay peaceful, stay assertive. I mean, don't back down, but don't give them what they want. That was what we were really involved in, was trying to do our part to make sure that the community understood, as awful as this was, as many atrocities were being committed, and I don't use that phrase lightly, but that's what they were. We could not give them what they wanted. They wanted chaos. They wanted the city to burn so that they could come in with the Insurrection Act and all the other things, and we never gave it to them. And that's how we ended up winning this battle.
Yeah, it was the restraint shown and the dedication shown. You mentioned the weather, but just the restraint also shown by people in Minneapolis was amazing. You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, the PR strategy has changed from Tom Homan. Do you think that the sudden decision to withdraw and to end this operation coincides at all with the fact that, hey, there's a vote coming up about funding, and public outcry against funding ICE is at an all-time high? Is there a connection, in your opinion?
Absolutely. not a big believer in coincidences.
There you go.
Not at all. I think two things happened. The murder of Alex Pretty was the turning point. If you look at the polling and you look at what was happening, it all cratered on them after that event. And so when Homan came in, he knew what he had to do, which was to bring this to an end, because they just continue to lose on it. And then when the vote was scheduled for yesterday, that was just a convenient circumstance for him to then say, oh, see, now we're leaving. This administration does not do anything without an evil purpose behind it.
Now, you mentioned a little earlier that even with the withdrawal of any sort of ICE agents, your job is not done in the Twin Cities. So what does that look like going forward? Because they have said that there will be some agents still there. But what does that look like for your group going forward, even with the withdrawal of the agents?
Yeah. So the first thing is we and everybody else that's been organizing around this, we're going to continue to have patrols. We're going to continue to have observers. We're going to continue to have groups making sure that the immigrant families that have been targeted have what they need. You know, that's all the short term stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As we get into the medium term, you know, we've got elections coming up here, as you know, everybody does midterms. And I, you know, the conversation we're just now starting to have, but I we're going to continue to have it, and I hope others will have it, is all of those constitutional observers now need to become poll protectors in November. They've made it abundantly clear that they're going to try to intimidate people into not voting. Well, you know, Minnesota's already shown we're not willing to be afraid to stand right up for what we believe in. So that's, I think that's really the next phase for this for us, is making sure that come November, people feel safe going out to vote so that we can change what needs to be changed.
Tim Wegener is our guest. He's a core leader of Indivisible. Why do we all keep, because we want to say invisible, but it's Indivisible Twin Cities. IndivisibleTwinCities.org is the website. It's all well and good that they're ending this operation. It's great that the troops will not be there. There will still be an ICE presence. We see it in Chicago. We see it everywhere. They're still there. But what seems to be lacking in all of this is a discussion about accountability. And who, you know, is there going to be justice for Renee Good and Alex Priddy? Is there going to be any sort of accountability for these ICE agents? And that doesn't seem to be part of the conversation yet.
It's not. You know, Governor Walz mentioned it yesterday in his press conference. And our Attorney General Keith Ellison, he's been talking about that as well. You know, obviously getting the federal government not letting the state be part of the investigation into both of these murders tells us, you know, they have no interest in accountability, but we already knew that.
Right.
Look, accountability is going to come over time. And no one likes to hear that, but that's really the only way that that's going to happen. We're going to need to vote out these people who are enabling this. And it's not just Trump and it's not just Stephen Miller. I mean, there's basically every Republican in Congress has enabled all of this to happen. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to have to be voted out so that then we can have people who are interested in accountability, who are interested in the rule of law, and who wants to hold these people who, I mean, not only did they violate the law, they violated the Constitution. I mean, it's going to have to happen, but it's going to take time.
I want to ask you about a ruling that came down last night. If you haven't seen the news, it was a federal judge, a Trump appointee, ruled that ICE detainees in Minnesota were effectively blocked from assessing attorneys at the Whipple Federal Building, violating their Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights. And so what was Indivisible Twin Cities' reaction to that ruling from this Trump appointee last night?
It's nice to see that even Trump appointees get it and want to follow the law. I think that's our reaction to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we know from people that have been held at Whipple all of the violations of constitutional rights. I mean, I live in a suburb of the Twin Cities on the east side of town, and one of our neighbors, he's an American citizen. He's a realtor. He was filming ICE from his car. They boxed him in. They broke his window. They pulled him out, slammed him to the ground, and took him to Whipple for 12 hours. No lawyer, no nothing. That's one example. And that's that's an American citizen they're doing that to. Imagine the atrocities. And again, I don't use that word lightly, but we know from the people that have been held there what they're doing to people inside that building.
Tim, before we let you go, as somebody who is observing this from the outside, and the whole world has been watching what's happening in the Twin Cities, what's the biggest lesson you think the rest of us could learn from what you folks have achieved in Minneapolis?
Democracy is not a spectator sport. It really isn't. You have to be involved. And we all are busy. We all have families. We all have lives. But this matters. If they can do it to my neighbor down the street, they can do it to me. They can do it to you. Get involved.
There you go. And it sounds so simple, but it is really the core of this whole thing. And again, we talked about it all the time, watching the people marching in sub-zero temperatures. Mm-hmm. This was not an easy time of year to be demonstrating. This, you had to really want it. You had to really care. And Minnesota showed up.
We did. We're very proud of Minnesota, as you can imagine.
I don't blame you. Well, Tim Wegener has been our guest. He's a core leader of Indivisible Twin Cities. I got it right on the last time. IndivisibleTwinCities.org. Tim, thanks for being here. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Grassroots organization, too, so go check it out if you want to help them out. There's also chapters throughout the country. 7:48 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Oh, are we in one of the most romantic states? We'll talk a little Valentine's Day to wrap things up on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
52 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson. I feel like
and
I missed
I'm
something.
Brian Noonan, and I am
How did
just,
you miss it?
I am in just a fun little mood this
because
morning.
Because when Parker gets ready for us to go into the on-air mode, it cuts all of my audio from StreamYard until he turns me back on. So So I missed all the good stuff.
I don't know if I can
stuff.
Say the last thing I heard.
No, you can't.
Okay.
You cannot.
Why not?
Because we're a morning show.
It's more internet friendly
safe harbor law.
air friendly.
All right.
Hi. Yes. Where hey, tomorrow's Valentine's Day. Here's the thing. There's going to be various opinions, but we want your opinion too at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-725-2484. How long into a relationship do you either stop celebrating Valentine's Day or you see that your Valentine's celebration just evolves into something a little less showy, a little less thirsty, a little less, oh, do you love me today? That kind of thing. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4844.
Is that how you got Mrs. Bryan? By asking her if she loved you today, just like that? Is that
I did.
Okay.
That
all
and
right.
A burlap sack over the dome. Boop. That's how we do it where I come from.
All right.
Also, Jamie found this. States being voted the most romantic, most intimate, the most,
Yeah.
my goodness.
Yeah, it was a DoorDash, so highly, highly scientific, I'm
Reputable.
Sure.
Reputable.
Yes, but you know.
That's where I get all my information.
But DoorDash. You know, they probably get it. I mean, how often do we go to DoorDash to have all these things delivered to our house because we don't actually want to take the time to go out and get it ourselves? So they probably know more about us.
And in Wisconsin, we don't want to do anything anyway.
Oh, no. We're not romantic.
Because,
we're not intimate.
No, throw that stat for Wisconsin.
Because DoorDash actually analyzed all their ordering data to rank the most romantic and most intimate states. And they were based on, the rankings were based on purchases of flowers, chocolate, sweets, some cases more of those private items. Now, the most romantic state in the country is Delaware. Seriously?
Delaware.
There's not too many.
Yeah, I was
going
to say.
Who doesn't love an L.L. Bean sweater and some syrup?
Well, of course.
Hey, baby. I want to keep you sticky and cozy.
Oh, see, that goes into the intimate category. So now you might be dabbling a little bit in both. But Delaware leads in the orders of flowers, chocolates, plush toys, and balloons during Valentine's week last year. All of that is boring and stupid. I'm sorry. If that's what you're getting your significant other, more power to you. I hope they love those things. I would
not. Let's get into the question because we have everybody at different stages of relationships.
Sure.
And then there's Parker with no one in his life.
Parker, do you have a date for this weekend?
Do I have a date for this weekend?
Yeah.
I have a date with my couch and basketball, I think.
Jealous.
Oh, my Lord.
All right. That doesn't actually sound horrible.
See?
No, it doesn't sound horrible.
No.
All right. I've been married the longest out of the group.
Okay. Yep.
And we started off like every other couple where it was, you know, big grand gestures to prove our love for each other. And mostly I say our, and that was, it always comes down to the guy having to do it. Ladies do it some, and you know, but overall it was the guy. But now after, it'll be 34 years next in April, 34 years. Now it's, you know, it's slowed down. It was like, why waste money? My wife has always hated cards, so I don't get her cards.
Lame.
I've mentioned that I get flowers. I get flowers throughout the year, which made Frank very upset. Because
I do not.
I do. And now we're now we do like kind of experience stuff if we do anything. Tomorrow we're going to Lakefront Brewery to get our vows renewed and get a free beer. It's going to be fun. And that's, and I said, because a box came and I knew the box had a label and I knew where it was from. And I was like, you said we're not getting each other gifts. And she said, I didn't get you a gift. I said, there's only one person in the house who uses this product, and it's moi. So now I'm in that catch 22. Frank, you'll understand this, and Jamie Corey would understand this, where, oh, we're not getting it. Now, do I run the risk of staying true to that?
No.
Do I have a little something? Even though yesterday I brought home flowers.
Doesn't matter.
Just because.
No.
Why? Hold on. Why
it's way too early. It's way too soon.
Yeah. Who buys just because flowers just a couple days before Valentine's?
The guy who then says special. No. The guy who then says these are
old.
Just tulips. They're not. No. They're not like Valentine-y flowers. They're just regular flowers. And I said, Happy Valentine's Day. So I covered myself just in case, but I don't think I did.
I don't think you did.
No, I don't think you did.
Did
I don't think you did either. I think you got some errands to run later today, and I think it needs to involve some shopping.
But she said, but tomorrow's outing is supposed to be our Valentine's gift to each other.
For whom?
She couldn't have been more excited when I mentioned this to her after we had Russ on the show. And I said, hey, I got an idea for Valentine's Day. What do you think of this? And once I said, and you get a free beer. Honest to God, her eyes lit up. She's 100% on board.
I feel like
Lakefront
still
is awesome.
It is.
I'm not going to lie.
As you hold up your Lakefront glass,
nice product, I
think you still need to surprise her with something little. It probably doesn't need to be like a big thing, but maybe like after you renew the vows or something, right? Like you surprise her with something little. Like, you know, she's drinking her free beer.
I've been surprising her with something little for 34 years, Jamie. Good morning.
We have some texts coming in. Tom from Hartford had a couple of good ones. He said, well, it never ends celebrating Valentine's Day. And then to Parker, he said, date with a couch.
I realized after I said it sounded
a
little J.D.
Vance
reference.
No, I will say that we've been married for 23 years, almost 23 years. Valentine's Day, never been an important day for us. It was when our kids were little, and I would always go above and beyond doing fun things for our kids. But for Corey and I, we were just like, whatever. Here's my thing with Valentine's Day. I committed to this human being because I love this human being, and I love him every single day. I don't need one day of the year to show that. I just don't. And I don't love flowers because there's been flower mishaps in our house. It's too long of a story to get into this morning. But I just, no. Let's just go do something fun. We're at that point where we just want to go do something fun by ourselves.
Yes. Just do something fun. Frank, keep that in mind with Mrs. Frank.
I will.
All right.
But you're going out to dinner, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
All right.
Of course.
Well, we'll tell her. By the way, Wisconsin.
You're a young couple.
Wisconsin on the DoorDash thing, number 3 for the least most romantic states ever. 7:59 Perfect. Right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.